Well, hi, everyone. When I was 15, I met a kid named Paul. And he was kind of outside the periphery of my core friend group. I mean, my main friends were mostly, you know, athletes. All of us were pretty good students, a pretty straight and narrow kind of crowd. But Paul, he was different. He was kind of wild. He did some crazy stuff. He got in trouble, spent a good amount of time visiting with the principal at school. I didn't hang out with him much, but he made me laugh, and I considered him a friend. Well, one week out of the clear blue, Paul invited me to spend the night at his house. And it took me off guard, but I said, sure. And I probably stretched the truth a little with my parents to get them to say yes. And I found myself at Paul's house spending the night. And everything was going pretty normally until about 1 a.m. when Paul said, hey, my parents are asleep now. Follow me. And so what else was I going to do? So we tiptoed down the hallway, past his parents' bedroom, through the living room, and quietly opened the door to the garage. And we stood there looking at his dad's car, and he says, we're taking a drive. Now, at this point of my opening illustration, I would just like to say that if you're listening to this and you're one of my children, in fact, if you're friends with one of my children, heck, everyone under 16, please just close your ears right now, okay? So Paul climbed up on top of the car. He disengaged the garage door opener from the power supply so that it would open manually. We lifted up the garage door without making a sound. He promptly got in the driver's seat, put the car in neutral, and he said in a hushed but forceful voice, push. So I pushed the car out of the garage all the way out into the street where Paul finally felt comfortable to turn the ignition on and start the car. Now, if my first mistake was to listen to Paul when he said push, my second mistake was to listen when he said, get in. Like I said, I was a pretty good kid. I got good grades. I listened to my parents. I believed in Jesus, all that stuff. Now don't get your hopes up for some grand conclusion to this story. We didn't get stopped by the police. We didn't have an accident. In fact, his parents never even found out. They didn't wake up when we returned. We pushed the car right back into its original spot. We closed the door, and nobody was any the wiser. And actually, my parents didn't find out either until this very moment. So I felt out of sorts about that for a while. And actually, Paul and I never really hung out again because it made me so uncomfortable what we did. But I did realize a valuable lesson in that moment, that the people that you hang out with can have a profound impact on the decisions that you make and ultimately on the trajectory of your whole life. I mean, the right people around you can lift you, encourage you, equip you, and the wrong people around you can be incredibly distracting, destructive, even poisonous in your life. And if you're not careful, you can go down a path that you never dreamed you'd be going down. And so here we are in our final week of our toxic series, and we're talking about toxic relationships. Now, this whole series has been based on content from a book by Craig Groeschel called Soul Detox. In fact, a lot of today's content comes right out of chapter 11 of that book called Radioactive Relationships. There was a speaker named Jim Rohn, and he said one time that you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. You're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Now, that's an attention getter, isn't it? And whether that's completely true or not, I think we can all agree that the people in your life, they can be the greatest spiritual asset to you, or they can be your worst spiritual curse. In fact, right now, I bet there are many of you that you can probably think of someone who's been a negative influence in your life. They're always critical, always complaining, always tearing people down, maybe tempting you. In fact, chances are that many of you are thinking of family members right now, and with good reason. I mean, I believe that every single family has a certifiable, bona fide whack job. Okay? And just to prove it, if I can get you to participate with me for just a minute, all of our locations, how many of you would say, unquestionably, in my family or extended family, there is an absolute psycho? Okay? Would you raise your hand right now? Raise it right up, loud and proud. Leave them up, if you will. Just leave them up, everyone. Now, I want you to look around. Okay? I said there's one in every family. And so if you don't have your hand up right now, you're probably the one, all right? I'm kidding. Put your hands down, okay? The truth remains that the people around us are really important for our spiritual health. You can turn to 1 Corinthians 15:33. We're coming there in a minute. But we'll see that people can either have a positive influence or a toxic one. And so today's big idea is this. The people you spend time with can either accelerate or destroy your spiritual progress. Show me your friends, I'll show you your future. I figured that out as a dumb 15-year-old kid, and it was true then, and it's still true today. So would you look at this passage in 1 Corinthians 15:33? It's a good one to underline if you're the underlining type. Paul says it this way. He says, do not be misled. Now, I think the reason that he starts off this way is because it's so easy to be misled when it comes to toxic relationships. You know, we may think, well, you know, hanging out with this person, it's not that big of a deal. They're not that dangerous. I'm going to be a good influence on them. You ever said that one? He says, don't be misled, right? Bad company corrupts good character. This is the reason that toxic people are so dangerous, because you think you're pulling them up when they're actually pulling you down. Bad company, it corrupts, it pollutes, it poisons, it destroys. Later, you can flip over here to 2 Timothy 2:16 and 17. Paul says it this way. He says, avoid irreverent babble, for it will lead people into more and more ungodliness, and their talk will spread like gangrene. Gangrene, that's brutal. Have you ever seen gangrene? I hadn't really, so I Googled it, and I'm going to tell you one thing. Don't Google it, okay? Gangrene is when a portion of your flesh dies and then it slowly spreads and your skin turns black and your flesh and muscles decay underneath that skin. It kind of creeps and crawls its way all over your body. And this is what Paul says happens when we associate with toxic people for too long. Spend too much time with the wrong people and your morals begin to decay. Your character weakens. Your faith begins to die like gangrene. This is the effect that wrong relationships can have on an otherwise healthy person. In his book, Soul Detox, Craig Groeschel talks about three types of toxic people who can corrupt our character. Here's the first one. It's the nonstop negative person. These are the people who find fault with everything. Whenever you're with them, they drag you down. They're judgmental, they're critical, they're gossipy, they're complaining. Nothing is ever good enough for them. The weather's too hot in the summer, it's too cold in the winter. I mean, Kim and I have this rule. We've always had it, that if you live in Erie, you have to pick one. You can either complain about the summer or you can complain about the winter, but you don't get both, okay? For the critic, they just get both. All they know how to do is pick everything apart. I'm going to let you in on a secret that might shock you. Church people can sometimes be negative. I know you'd never believe that. Although I must say, and I want to take this moment to brag, that in recent years, one of the things that I've most appreciated about our church is that by and large, we haven't had a lot of chronic complaining around here. It can stick churches in the mud. And with all the stuff that we throw at you, the change that we throw, it's miraculous. I mean, the prevailing attitude with you guys has always been, oh, we're going to do 10 services? All right. We need 100 more volunteers? Giddy up. I'm willing to sacrifice and do whatever I need to do to reach more people. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't hiccups and you can't push back on stuff. But one of the many, many reasons that I love this church so much is that you are all so generally positive and uplifting and resist the urge to complain about stuff all the time. So the first kind of toxic person is the nonstop negative. The second is this, the constant controller. This person is overbearing, demanding, manipulative, that they might be abusive. They can use fear to intimidate you, or perhaps you always feel guilty when you're around them. I have to do this or they're going to get mad at me. Or that they can be that overbearing parent who starts by setting out your clothes in kindergarten and then kind of never stops. And before long, they're choosing your friends and your college and your career and your spouse. I know a pastor who said that in his very first wedding that he ever did, he had this kind of controlling mother, and it was the mother of the groom, the worst kind, right? And he knew it was bad when he looked up at one point during the wedding ceremony, and the only two people in the room who were crying, just bawling, were the groom and his mother, right? It was a toxic relationship, and the marriage lasted a total of 6 months, right? So toxic people include the nonstop negative, the constant controller. Here's the third one to watch out for. It's the tantalizing tempter. Now, this could be a boyfriend or girlfriend who's always tempting you sexually, trying to push you to do something that you don't want to do. This could be your buddies pushing you to go out and let loose and come on, man, you only live once. Or maybe it's that group of so-called friends from your past whose presence in your life is a constant reminder of the mistakes that you made back there. And these people are still luring you back just to make themselves feel better about their own addictions or their own failed marriages or their own ability to keep a job. And it may not even be the obviously kind of dirty stuff. It could be that you've got a tempting friend who's materialistic. And every time you're with this person, you're just kind of sucked into that world. You see the new and shiny stuff and you just want more and more of it. Or that friend or coworker who's always trying to engage you in gossip or slander. Or that group that's constantly making fun of other people or bullying people. And it just kind of rubs off on you in a bad way. It's not that these people are horrible. It's just that when you're around them, something happens in you that's not good. And when you're with these people, sometimes you think, well, you know, they're harmless. It's just a little, yeah, they're just kind of annoying. I mean, yes, they're negative or they're super controlling or they're tempting me to do stuff. I know it isn't right, but I mean, it's no big deal. They're just annoying. Here's what you need to hear. You have to have discernment to know when it's not just annoying, when their influence is actually toxic, when they're corrupting your character. And if you're not careful, they can take you away from God's best and draw you into a lifestyle that could spiritually harm you forever. In fact, when you see people dying in their 30s, a lot of times you look back to their friend group from their teenage years, and that's where it all started. They were just never able to break free from those toxic relationships. Now, let me be clear. Everyone, including you and me, we can have toxic tendencies. What I'm not saying here is that at the first sign of somebody being controlling, that you brand them as toxic, you put a big T on their chest, and you just steer clear, never speak to them again. No. Because here's the truth. We are called to live our lives on mission. We're called to minister to the least and the last and the lost, which means there will be some broken folks that we're called to be in relationship with. And so there's an element of wisdom required here. But here's the rub. I've seen one too many people in the name of reaching their broken friends or, you know, I'm going to date this guy and try to win him to the Lord or, you know, let's hang out with our crazy neighbors and try to be a good influence. And instead, they just get sucked into a lifestyle that's not pleasing to God. So, yes, you're called to reach the people around you, but it's also very important for you to be spiritually healthy. And many of you are drowning in the dysfunction of the people around you so much that you'll never be healthy enough to bring life to them. It's a little bit like when you're on an airplane, you know, before you take off and they come on the loudspeaker and they say, if the cabin loses pressure, an oxygen mask will drop down. And they say, before assisting the person next to you, what do you need to do? You need to put your own mask on first. And that sounds selfish, but that's not selfish because the truth is, if you can't breathe yourself, you're not going to be able to help anyone else breathe. Same principle applies. And speaking of taking care of yourself first, some of you, before we get into this and you start looking all around at everyone else and saying, you're toxic and you're toxic and you're toxic. I mean, if it seems like every single person in your life has drama going on, there comes a point where you need to ask yourself, why does everyone's drama keep finding its way to me? Or if you say, I'm surrounded by temptation constantly, temptation sexually, temptation with substances, temptation toward materialism, I'd ask you, what is it about you that advertises I'm open for business? I mean, how does all that stuff keep finding its way to you? Are you truly willing? Are you truly committed to being set apart by God? So let's talk practically for a minute. If you find yourself with toxic people in your life, let's look at two very simple principles to help us learn to effectively and biblically manage toxic relationships. Here's the first principle. We need to set healthy boundaries. Dr. Henry Cloud, who's a bit of an expert on this subject of boundaries, he suggests that relational boundaries are a little bit like property lines around your house. You know, those lines that determine who owns which property and also who's responsible for that property. And so if your neighbor's tree falls into your yard on your property line, or their dog does his business in your yard, or right where your kids play, or your neighbors are constantly throwing trash in your yard, there comes a point where you have to say, these aren't my problems. I'm not owning these problems. But you tell your neighbor, you need to take responsibility for your own problems and your own issues because they're littering my yard. Relationally, your rage attacks, your addiction, your constant lying, your negativity, that stuff keeps falling in my yard. And I'm not responsible for your yard, but I am responsible for keeping my own yard clean and free of debris. You see, proper boundaries keep the good stuff in and the bad stuff out. It keeps your pets in and your kids protected, but it also keeps the predators out and the garbage out. And you may say, well, that doesn't sound very Christian. mean, aren't we supposed to just love everybody? And aren't we just supposed to kind of be humble and let them do whatever they want? Yes, we're called to love, and yes, we're called to be humble. But setting relational boundaries is actually a very Christ-like thing to do. Think about Jesus. Jesus loved everyone equally, but he didn't treat everyone equally. He recruited 12 to be his disciples, not 20, not 500, not 13. He chose 12. When he traveled, he would heal a few people. Do you ever think about the number of people that Jesus didn't heal? He set boundaries. He set boundaries with the Pharisees, the religious leaders, all the time. He'd say, I'm not telling you everything. I'm keeping you at arm's length. I'm drawing a boundary here. He even had boundaries with his family and very closest friends whenever they tried to take him away from doing something God wanted him to do. I think of the time in Mark chapter 3 when his mom and brothers came to take him home. They were thinking, you must be tired, Jesus. You look terrible, Jesus. Come on home. And he essentially says, no, mom, you're not going to take me away from God's will for my life. Or the time in Luke chapter 4 when Jesus healed his friend Peter's mother-in-law. I mean, you want to talk about a miracle. How about a guy wanting his mother-in-law brought back from death's door? So he heals Peter's mother-in-law. And after he's done, the people from the village come up and they try to force Jesus to stay in their town. They said, stay here, Jesus. Set up shop here, Jesus. Don't leave our town. But he drew a boundary line. He said, no, I'm not staying here. I came to preach and to heal in other villages as well. The classic example of Jesus drawing a relational boundary is in Matthew 16:23. One of his top guys, Peter, you know, his closest friends, he kind of crosses a line with Jesus. And so Jesus is predicting his death. He says, you know, I'm going to give my life. I'm going to die for you all. And then I'm going to come back from the dead. It's going to be a really good thing. Peter jumps up and he says, with all good intentions, no, Jesus, I'm not going to let you die. There's no way I'm going to let that happen to you. And look what Jesus says. He put up a very firm boundary with Peter in Matthew 16:23. He said, get behind me, Satan. You're a hindrance to me. For you're not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man. In other words, Peter, what you're saying here, it's gangrene to me. Even though you don't mean it, the spiritual enemy is actually working through you to try to make me veer from God's path. And so Jesus set a healthy boundary by telling Peter, get behind him. Get out of my way. At that moment, Jesus effectively put Peter on the outside of the fence, the boundary line of his yard, where he couldn't control the situation. Now, Peter didn't stay outside the fence. Jesus didn't dump Peter and as a disciple. Peter didn't walk away. But Peter did learn that he was not the one who was going to control Jesus' future. So do you have people like that? Do you have people in your life who are making you veer from God's path for your life? Maybe it's time to set some boundaries, because if you don't, your spiritual growth will be stunted. You teenagers may say, you know, I don't know why I feel so stuck in my relationship with God. I don't know why I can't move past these things, my lust or my addiction, or why I keep getting in trouble at school or at home. Well, maybe it's because you're still hanging around the same old people and you need to draw some boundaries in those relationships. Let me give everyone some sample boundaries that I think that we could implement. One is the simple phrase, I'm not going there with you. I mean, if people are doing something around you that's not helpful and it pulls you down rather than lifting you up, don't judge them. You just say, I'm not going there with you. If people decide to make toxic decisions, you don't need to join them. If you have a problem with alcohol and someone invites you to an event where there's going to be an open bar, you just say no. You don't have to explain yourself. If you're dating someone and they keep pushing you sexually, be loving but firm and just say, hey, I'm not going there with you. If you're married and your old flame contacts you on Facebook and invites you to lunch, that's an easy one, guys. No way. I'm not going there with you. A second boundary phrase. I'm not going to talk about that with you. And maybe you have some friends who always gossip. And instead of participating, you just need to explain, I'm not participating. Remember, if someone gossips with you, they will surely gossip about you. Ladies, maybe you get together with the girls and it always ends up with them kind of trashing their husbands. You just need to say, I'm going to honor my husband. I believe in him. I'm going to speak the best about him. If you're going there, guys, you can do it without me. Or maybe, guys, your buddies are always talking about the girls. Man, did you see her? Check that out. Or you just say, no, I'm not going to pollute my mind with that. When you guys start doing that, I'm out. I'm not going to talk about that with you. Okay? Here's the third simple phrase. I won't let you treat me that way. If somebody continues to tear you down and doesn't treat you with dignity, you need to set boundaries. You're not coming out swinging or yelling, just very calmly, you're putting up a simple boundary. You can't treat me like that. You can spew your garbage, but I'm not going to let it fall in my yard. I won't let you treat me that way. Now, with all of that being said, there will be times when you do that and somebody repeatedly does not respect your boundary. They continue to tempt, or they continue to criticize, or they continue to control or abuse. They continue their toxic poison. And at that point, the second thing to do if they continue to pollute is this. Sometimes you have to cut off the toxic relationship. I mean, unfortunately, there are times when relationships are so toxic and so unhealthy that we need to cut them off altogether. This needs to be the very last resort, and it needs to come after all other options like counseling and prayer and honest conversation and gentle but clear confrontation has taken place. But we need to know that there are times when it's okay to walk away from toxic people. Now, listen. Please listen. I want to be very, very clear. I am not talking about divorce. If you have a toxic marriage, it is because both of you are toxic. There is a sin sickness in your relationship. And when you're physically sick, you go to a doctor. When you're relationally sick with your spouse, you go to a counselor. You go to your pastor. You go to your life group. You go to Celebrate Recovery, but you work through it. The only time to even consider cutting off a covenant relationship like marriage is when there's the presence or threat of physical abuse, or there has been treachery or betrayal of some kind against the marriage covenant. And so, marriage aside, in our broader relationships, there may come a time when the toxic relationship needs to have a separation. Again, this should be a very rare thing for a Christian to do. I've only done this a couple of times in my whole life. And so when should you do this? Well, it's when you realize that the relationship is making you chronically toxic. There are some interesting examples of this in the Bible. You can see right at the beginning in Genesis 13, 8 and 9. Interesting little passage. Two family members, Abraham and Lot, they've had some relational strife and disputes, mainly over property, and the relationship was becoming toxic. Look what they did in Genesis 13. Says, so Abraham said to Lot, let's not have any quarreling between you and me or between your herders and mine, for we are close relatives. Is not the whole land before you? Let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. And if you go to the right, I'll go to the left. Now, notice that Abraham was gracious, even in the decision to part ways. He wasn't bad-mouthing or cursing. He said, all I know is that we can't keep doing this, but you choose which land you want. I'll take the leftovers. It's interesting to note that after this separation took place, Lot's land was eventually taken over by an alliance of four kings, and Lot was taken captive. And upon hearing the news, Abraham led a force of 318 men to rescue Lot. And so their parting actually raised the level of love and compassion over time in this relationship. And this should be an important lesson to us all. Don't burn bridges when you part ways. You never know how God might come back and use the situation in the future. But we also have an example in the New Testament of two ministry partners getting toxic with each other and splitting up. Paul and Barnabas had a sharp disagreement, and things started to go sideways about some ministry decisions. The relationship became toxic. And instead of fighting about it, instead of going to court or slandering each other, over in Acts 15, 39, the Bible says this. And there arose a sharp disagreement so that they separated from each other. Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed away to Cyprus, but Paul chose Silas and departed. So they split company. And so, yes, if there comes a point, even with really good people, where your faith is starting to be undermined and you sense that you're being led away from Christ, it's time to part ways so you don't become polluted. If you're a teenager and someone is sexting you and won't stop, do something. Change your number, tell an adult, but do something. If you're in business with somebody who continues to insist on using unethical business practices, first try to talk it out, but if they insist or if they threaten to damage you or your reputation, get out of there, cut your losses, end the relationship. If you're married and somebody at work is flirting with you constantly and you're starting to feel tempted, don't stick around and pretend that it's gonna get better. You're playing with fire. Exit the situation, report it to a supervisor, ask for a transfer, shine a light on it with your spouse, but don't risk the poisonous toxin that will come from a dumb mistake. End it. And remember, guys, the whole reason to set boundaries or to cut off a relationship is so that you can be more and more like Jesus, who at times, he would even set a boundary so that he could go and be with God for 40 days and 40 nights. And it was so that he could be full of God's love and so full of God's presence and so full of God's Spirit that he could go full on, full strength into a toxic world and help hurting and people and open blind eyes and heal deaf ears and love the unlovable and touch the lepers. That the reason that he could do those things was because he was so full of God's presence. And so the goal of our lives is to be more and more like Jesus, full of his presence. This is the one of the reasons that actually a bunch of you are going to get baptized today at one of our locations. It's the next step in being filled up with God's presence and declaring to the world, I have a new identity in Christ. Now, setting relational boundaries, it's not about self-esteem. It's not even about self-preservation, like, ooh, I've got to stay away from those scary, evil people. No, it's saying, I've got to do what it takes to be so full of God that I can go and give his love to everyone who needs him in this world. But you'll never be able to do that if you continue to let gangrene, let the bad company in your life corrupt your good character. So let me conclude with these three questions to ask yourself that depending on how you answer them, it should prompt you to take some action. The first question to ask is this. It's the hardest one. Am I the toxic one? I mean, it takes a lot of guts to admit that you are, but it's also a first step toward healing. It may be because of some stuff that happened in your past or whatever, but the first step is admitting it to someone you trust, and then you need to get some help if you're the toxic one. We have some amazing groups that meet on Monday nights in our Night of Hope, including Celebrate Recovery, which is comprised of a bunch of overcomers who are working through their stuff. So if you're toxic, admit it and get some help. Here's the second question. Where do I need to establish some healthy boundaries? Is there a relationship in your life where you need to say, I'm not going to go there with you, or I'm not going to talk about that with you, or I won't let you treat me that way? If there is, kindly but firmly set the boundary. No more trash in your yard. The third question, is there a toxic relationship that needs to be cut off? Again, I'm not talking about marriage. If your marriage is struggling, get some help. But is there a friend or a coworker or a person in your life whose influence on you has become toxic? Don't wait another day. Do it. The pain of the moment will be worth it in the end for your soul. And again, if you do have to cut things off, it should be done in a very Christ-like way. It's, I love you. I'm always going to pray for you. I'm not bad-mouthing you, but this is what we have to do to honor God. So ponder these three questions and take a step today. I pray that this toxic series has been meaningful to you, that you've made some positive steps as it relates to your thoughts, your words, your influences, your relationships. I mean, I've heard a number of stories already about what God has been doing in many of your lives this month. And it would be a mistake, listen, it would be a mistake for you to not come out and blow the roof off of our church in a worshipful response for all that God has done and is doing at the Rise Up Worship Night this Wednesday night. We'll see you guys then. God bless you.